Welcome back to the second half of The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Well, as you know, the United States is currently rolling out the biggest health care reform in our history, and even the fans of the Affordable Care Act will admit that some things have been glitchy, but the problems with the website is getting fixed, and consumers are finding out one by one what Obamacare means for each of us individually. But all of this started out with the realization that there are big problems with the health care system that we have today in the United States. We spend too much money, and we get some of the worst results. We have high infant mortality and low life expectancy. That's just to name a couple of the many of the problems that we have here. So why do other industrialized nations have better outcomes for seemingly less of their GDP? Well, Elizabeth H. Bradley, she's a professor of public health at Yale, and Lauren Taylor, who studies public health and medical ethics at Harvard Divinity School, wrote a book on the issue, The American Healthcare Paradox, Why Spending More is Getting Us Less. And welcome to The Source.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Dr. Bradley, let me ask you, why? Well, so it's a paradox. So does that mean there's no solution? That's usually what a paradox means, right?
Well, it does mean that we have to really think carefully about what the different alternatives are and balance a few different things. The thesis of our book is really that we are depending on a medical care system to address social, economic, and behavioral challenges, which are really the factors that are limiting our health. And this is an expensive way to go about trying to get health, and it's not always that effective.
So it's not just what we're spending on medicine and hospitals. That's what we see in the United States as our health care expenses. But if you look at the European model, they're going to look at it differently, and they're going to factor in their social cost, and that's why they're getting better outcomes. Is that your finding, Lauren Taylor?
Yeah, so it does have to do with this issue of broadening the scope of the analysis. I think for a long time in this country, we have thought that, goodness, we spend so much on healthcare, the numbers now top 17%, and others do better. But what we found is when you look across 34 kind of industrialized countries, the main driver of health outcomes, the measure that was most associated with doing well in the things you mentioned earlier, like infant mortality and life expectancy, was not necessarily just healthcare spending. It was the total amount, both the healthcare and the social, in which case countries like France and Sweden, Austria, Switzerland are actually spending much more than we are. And importantly, they're spending it in a different way. They're allocating a greater proportion of the total to social service expenditure and less to healthcare. And we're really one of the only countries that focuses so heavily on investing in healthcare, I think, at the neglect of our social service investment.
But Dr. Bradley, we've heard so often that the United States has the best healthcare system in the world, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We shouldn't ignore this. In fact, we do get quite a bit for what we're spending, as Lauren just said, more than 17% of the GDP. But we have to think, what is it we're getting? So, for instance, if you have diabetes, you're more likely to see a specialist within 6 months here. More seniors have total hip replacements than in any other country. The percent of our population that goes to a specialist every year is much higher here. If you have a heart disease, you're much more likely to get catheterization, bypass. We have 26 MRIs per million people here in the United States, and we look in Western Europe, Scandinavia, it's going to be more 5, 6, 7 per million people. So we are a completely different animal in how we're organizing our medical care services, and we are getting some good benefits from it. But what we have to really focus on is health overall, and if we look at the entire population's health in terms of the prevalence of diabetes, the prevalence of heart disease, the prevalence of cancer, life expectancy, we're doing much worse in all these indicators. So we get more medical services, no question about that, but do we get more health? It doesn't look that way.
You mentioned diabetes. San Antonio has a huge diabetes problem. We lead the nation in diabetes-related amputations. And if we had more of this model that you talk a lot about Scandinavia in the book, how would that alleviate that? How would that be a solution?
Sure. I think diabetes is a great example. It's a disease that's strongly associated with social and behavioral determinants of health. So, you know, things like nutrition, of course, are really important for diabetes. I think even case management, helping people receive services on a regular basis, some preventative care, so that it doesn't get to the point where someone is so ill that they have to show up on the hospital door and the hospital decides they need to take pretty extreme measures like an amputation. And diabetes isn't the only example. More than 70% of stroke and 80% of heart disease, which of course are also big national cost centers in some ways for our healthcare market, are associated with these social and behavioral determinants of health. So I think one of the big takeaways from the book is distinguishing between health and healthcare. You know, health is driven by things that are where we live and what we eat, the air we breathe, and healthcare is really just one fairly small determinant of our health overall.
Our phone lines are open. If you want to join the conversation, you've got a question about the American healthcare paradox, why the U.S. is spending more and it's getting less for our healthcare dollars. Call in 614-8980, 614-8980. So, Dr. Bradley, in the book you talk about a, I don't know if it's an imaginary case, about someone who is a diabetic and they don't have the right kind of shoes. It's, they're falling apart. There's holes in the shoes, and they end up getting, their feet are always wet, and so they end up having bad cuts and getting infections, and they end up with a lot of nasty amputations. But if they had the right pair of shoes, then this very expensive process and painful event would not have happened. So is that in a capsule?
Yep, that's exactly how we open the book on Joe. And Joe's name has been changed, but it is a completely true story. I wish we could say it's the only story like this we heard, but unfortunately this is an event that recurs and daily across the United States again and again. It's the event where, because some relatively inexpensive and simple intervention here, a good pair of shoes, is not undertaken, for some people who have a chronic illness like diabetes and others, eventually that lands the person in the hospital with very extreme situations, up to and including amputation, as you've said, which of course leads to a life of more disability, potential difficulty getting a job, keeping one's job, sometimes difficulty therefore keeping housing, and you just have this spiral that devolves to someone who really can't contribute to society and is certainly not happy.
So would there be like a doctor who or some caseworker that would write him a prescription for a pair of shoes, and then he would be able to cash that at the five and dime and get a pair of shoes?
Well, you could actually see. Yeah, go ahead, Lauren.
I was just going to say, I don't know if it would necessarily need to be a prescription, although there have been movements in the United States for physicians wanting to write prescriptions for healthier food. And the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation recently just did a survey of physicians, and physicians reported that one in seven prescriptions they would write, if they could write them to address social needs, would be for things like different physical activity patterns, improved housing, or these food needs. So I don't know that it necessarily needs to be writing a prescription for food, but certainly a more team-based approach where healthcare and social services are working side by side and bringing to bear the resources of both those sectors.
You're treating the person. You're treating not a disease, not a condition, but the person. Okay, we're going to continue this conversation, and we really want to hear from our listeners. I know you've got some questions. You've got something to say. Call in 614-8980, 614-8980, the American Healthcare Paradox. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. We're going to be right back. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. We're talking about the book, The American Healthcare Paradox, Why Spending More is Getting Us Less. The authors of the book, Dr. Elizabeth Bradley, is a professor of public health at Yale, faculty director of its Global Health Leadership Institute. Also, Lauren Taylor studies public health and medical ethics at Harvard Divinity School. Let's go ahead and go to the phones, because we do have a couple of callers, and our phone line is 614-8980, 614-8980. Ellen is on the line. Ellen, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. I called because this year I'm paying $468 a month to COBRA, the insurance that I have to COBRA because I had a medical layoff. I have what's considered to be an excellent employers-funded insurance program, which cost me $468 a month, and in which my out-of-pocket this past year has been over $5,000, even though theoretically the stop loss is $2,500. Last week I had to buy a prescription that was not covered. I'm in a discount program locally, God bless HEB, and it was $54. If I hadn't been in the program, it would have been $96. If I had been able to purchase it online, it was an antibiotic and I couldn't wait for that, it would have cost me $18.70. I think there's a pretty good set of reasons why the situation is as it is, and I think it's because healthcare in America is a for-profit system. Thank you.
All right, Ellen, thank you for your call. So she's talking about incentives. We have an incentive in the United States for there's a profit motive, and it's not really an incentive to keep people out of the medical system. Dr. Bradley.
Yeah, I feel for you, Ellen, and I have heard this story many, many times repeated, so I think you've asked an important question and posed an important answer. In fact, you're right that our medical care system is very much driving the way people try to become healthy in the United States. It is the fundamental tool that we have and lack of some of the social services that might help as well. What's the result of this? A very high-cost system, because often the tool being used doesn't really fit the condition the person has. In addition, you raise the issue of for-profit medicine. And without question, I don't think we can look just to the for-profit medicine, but if we look, where do we put the blame for this very high-cost system? In the end of the day, we all share in a piece of this. No question, providers have got incentives to provide more and more medicine, which costs more and more. But we found often in our research, patients and families as well demand a lot, and as a result, and sometimes demand after in consultation with a physician. So there really is a collective problem we have, not an individual problem we have, of how are we going to get a grip on this as a country.
Okay. Let's go to another caller on the air, and our phone number is 614-8980. Blake is on the line. Blake, welcome to The Source.
Yeah. Am I on?
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
Yeah. There's a concept called enlightened self-interest that I think should be attached to what we're talking about here, where the $40 set of shoes remediates a $10,000 bill for treatment, and increasing the Medicaid thing would actually save the state money by keeping people out of the emergency rooms. It just we need to sort of enlighten the political populace with enlightened self-interest.
Okay, Blake, I follow you, but so he's saying, of course, if we could get politics out of this, then maybe we'd be able to come up with some more direct solutions. Does that make sense, Lauren Taylor?
Absolutely. I actually think Blake is right on the money here. I think we all have a responsibility here, and we can actually act in our own self-interest and help poor Joe with a pair of shoes. People often forget that when you enroll in an insurance pool, you are already paying the cost for someone else's health care. Often we resort to a rhetoric of like real rugged individualism where I don't want to pay for Joe or I don't want to pay for Joe's care. But as Blake alluded to, if we could get Joe to the right person to get the care he actually needs, it may be much less expensive down the road for Joe and for me.
So, Dr. Elizabeth Bradley, you're a professor of public health at Yale. With what's happening now with the rollout of the Affordable Care Act, and we're seeing some people are getting sticker shock with what they're going to have to pay for health care, is it because we had hidden costs? We didn't know that so many costs that we've had for treatment were being passed on to, say, like taxpayers for a public health system. Now that's going to be more directly attached to people's individual treatment, or what is happening there?
I do think the ACA brings to light, makes explicit exactly how much it costs the country to insure everybody to be able to be paid for in this very expensive medical care system. To the degree, it's painful, but to the degree that we are able to see this now, explicitly debate about it, politic about it, I think it will help the country over the long term. as you just said, these won't be hidden anymore. They'll be explicit, and we'll have to decide as a country, are we really making the best investment we can? And it may be that we really aren't, and in fact, we could use some of these dollars to accomplish a different approach to providing for people to become healthy, not always strictly through the medical care system.
We hear a lot in the book about Scandinavia and their healthcare system. It's not possible to just take their wholesale system and drop it on top of what we have in the United States. Do you think, Dr. Bradley, that we can take bits and pieces of it if we look at it and learn what are their best practices?
Absolutely. One of the key reasons we went to Scandinavia, we were first attracted to it because it really is achieving the best health outcomes for the money paid. One of the surprises we found is if you add up our spending in medical care and our spending in social services and you compare it to Sweden, the U.S. is not a big spender. You put these two together, we're pretty similar, really. So we really had the question, well, what of this system could we learn from? We know whatever we do, it has to be done in an American way. It cannot be done the way Scandinavia has done it, but that doesn't mean we can't learn something from it. The kernel that we really learned in Scandinavia was this ability at local levels to think about a holistic budget for education, housing, medical care, nutrition, employment support. Think about that holistically by a democratically elected officials and by markets themselves. Think about that holistically and think, how could we get our biggest bang for the buck given all of these investments? In the United States, we're not doing that. In the United States, we're much more siloed. You know, we at a local level, a state level, these are usually budgets are determined separately. The allocations are separately. The regulations are separate. Just can't look at the whole picture as well as probably they're able to do in Scandinavia.
So, Lauren Taylor, it sounds like you're advocating for the nanny state.
I don't think so at all. And I actually was going to add that part of what we gained in going to Scandinavia, certainly there were some models that we report in the book and I think hold a lot of promise and are quite rational, as Betsy just described. You know, there's a more collaborative model between health and social services instead of one where they actually compete, which is what we have here in many instances. But the other thing we gained was by going and looking at another system and talking to a different culture of folks about what healthcare means and how to set up a system, Betsy and I really came back and felt like, wow, we understand our own system so much better. And so I think that engagement with the other, even if you never take that model, and even if you decide the whole thing just does not work for the United States for whatever reason, our value profile doesn't fit it or politically it won't work, I think we know ourselves better and we can better identify the challenges, one of which was we have a totally different conception of health, and our conception of health in this country is quite narrow, and it's totally pinned to the quality of our health care. So I don't think we are advocating for a nanny state in any way. I think we have a lot of faith in the local people, grassroots movements, communities to find their own solutions to this issue, and we profile four of those in the book. So that's my perspective on that.
So, but you're saying that treating the individual, you know, with social services and having more social services and funding them at a level that's comparable to what you have in Scandinavia and Sweden, that's what some people are afraid of when they hear about the Affordable Care Act, that they think that that is the next step, that now the government's going to have an incentive to be more involved in our lives. And that's not what they want, Dr. Bradley.
Yeah, David, I would be happy to address that. Actually, we don't think that we need to change the spending in any way vis-a-vis the level of spending or the involvement. And as Lauren just said, many of the most innovative models in the United States do this integration of social care and services and medical care in a completely either a nonprofit, even for-profit, in a market system. So it's important to recognize the book does not ask for more spending in any way, but it does ask to spend smarter. And we're already spending this money this way. Is there any way that we can get more health for the amount of dollars we're putting in this? And we believe there really is. And we saw several models actively doing this and getting great cost reductions on the medical care side by just being attentive to things like shoes, like an air conditioner, like the right family support at home.
Or clean air, clean water.
Exactly. So it's really important that this not get misconstrued as more government, more money. There is no way that we would recommend that. The proper thing to think about is we spend plenty. How can we get more for this? How can we do it in a smarter way?
All right. Well, I thank you so much. It was an eye-opening book, The American Healthcare Paradox, Why Spending More is Getting Us Less. The author is Dr. Elizabeth Bradley, professor of public health at Yale. Lauren Taylor studies public health and medical ethics at Harvard Divinity School. Thank you so much for joining us on The Source this afternoon.
Thanks, David.
Thank you.
And this is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Thank you so much for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. David Martin Davies is executive producer and host. Paul Flav is the show's producer. Management and oversight comes from VP of Programming Wayne Coble. Chris Udaly is the TPR web editor. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.